They went very politely into Biden's places and they raided Trump's house in search of documents. It's not like they were trying to find a bomb.
The law should be blind in all cases. You shouldn't use the law to weaponize the law against Trump or change the law to specifically go after one person. How is that not like just total miscarriage of justice?
Anytime there's a development in this case, it's worse for Joe Biden because they no longer have that narrative that they can go after Donald Trump with. They used it at first, and then it came out that Joe Biden had these documents, and now the narrative has completely collapsed in on them.
All right, folks, TikTok's legislation passed the House. It's moving out of the Senate, but will it pass? Biden says he'll sign it. A lot more to get into with that. Donald Trump down in court today. An amazing panel headed your way. Carrie Sheffield is with us. She's from the Independent Women's Forum, but she's got a brand new book out called Motorhome Prophecies. Luke Ball is with us from Masonboro Strategies. And then our good friend Tim Graham, the executive editor of Newsbusters from the Media Research Center. He's going to join us as well. But before we get into that conversation with the panel, I want to tell you about two amazing sponsors that make this show possible. Let's hear from them first before we get into the panel. Attention animal lovers. If you've rescued dogs like I have, then you're going to want to check out the work of Delta Rescue. And you go to deltarescue.org. You can see it for yourself. My friend Leo Grillo, he started this all by rescuing one Doberman and he named the dog Delta. And that stands for dedication and everlasting love to animals. That's become an enduring mission for Leo. It's now a no-kill sanctuary, not a shelter, a no-kill sanctuary. They take care of dogs, cats, horses that need nutrition, veterinary care, whatever, and they can roam free. This is all because Leo Grillo has created this mission. And our $5, $10, $15, $100,000 donations keep the work of Delta Rescue going on. But if we want to make this an enduring mission to help this work that Leo has started go on for a lifetime, then check out the estate planning kit that they've got there and see if you can make Delta Rescue part of your estate so that this mission continues for a lifetime. DeltaRescue.org. Check out what they do. Check out the estate planning kit and help support this great, great cause. When things go south, are you going to be ready for that crisis when power goes out? Think about it. With all of the natural disasters that are occurring, attacks on our power grid, will you be ready? I will be. I have a Patriot Power Generator 2000X in my home. If the power goes out, I will be ready to power my fridge, our tablets for our kids, their computers, televisions, radios, whatever it needs, our phones. All of that can be taken care of through the Patriot Power Generator 2000X. The best part about the Patriot Power Generator 2000X is that it's powered through solar power. You get two free solar panels that come with it to power it. So you've got no gas. You don't have to worry about fumes or noise. You can bring it into your house. You can travel with it. No matter what, you, your family, your loved ones will be taken care of in times of crisis. It can even power your fridge. The best part, as I said, is that you don't need to worry about going and getting gas and refilling it. The solar panels that come free with it will be your saving grace. Go to 4patriots.com/Spicer, 4patriots.com/Spicer to get your Patriot Power Generator 2000X and be ready in a time of crisis. All right, gang, good to see you all. Big concerns up on Capitol Hill. House passes this bipartisan TikTok bill. Now apparently it's heading to the Senate. The president says he'll sign it, but the Senate seems a little squishy. Tim, what are you hearing and what do you think about where the bill is right now?
Well, one would think if it's this popular in the House, wouldn't you also assume that it would pass in the Senate like 68 to 32 or 70 to 30? I don't know what the precise count is right now. I do know that Democrats are really worried about upsetting all the under 30s.
Yeah. Luke, I just wonder how many of these guys are like a tick what? The Senate is not exactly known as the most tech-savvy group of individuals. Not that the House is either, but I have a feeling that there's a bunch of staffers with a phone standing there going, hit this is what it looks like, and them going, I don't understand, it's just another cat video.
Yeah, a lot of them over in the Senate think that a floppy disk is revolutionary technology. Whenever it goes from the House to the Senate, I am curious to see who votes for it, who votes against it, and the reasons that they give. Because over in the House, like, Massey actually raised a couple of interesting points related to the TikTok issue. I think TikTok is like the trans fat of the tech world, frankly. We know it's bad. We just, no one wants to do anything about it because everyone seems to enjoy it so much. But the issues he raised with the particular legislation said that essentially, it would open the door for a future executive to have influence over other applications. And that seems to be like a big problem in the House of Representatives. A lot of time when legislation comes up trying to fix a problem, it doesn't necessarily only address the issue at hand and rather has repercussions further down the line for things that we don't even imagine, and basically gives more power over to our American surveillance state. So that's my concern with it. I haven't done a deep dive of the legislation itself, but the top line issues here, I think that some of the senators may cite that reason for voting against it. Now, we must drill down on some of them and recognize that there's probably people who have conflicts at play. Like, they might stand to benefit if that bill fails. So if that's the reason and they're just trying to hide behind a First Amendment issue, that's a problem.
Right. So, Carrie, I get Luke's points, but here's the thing. You're not hearing other platforms, you know, and again, I'm not trying to, I don't really care what Facebook thinks, but Elon Musk isn't out there saying, hey, whoa, slow this down. This could affect me if a sudden, you know, I get it. I feel like, you know, to Luke's point, what they're hiding behind is a bunch of big donors that are saying we own part of this thing. And we're therefore, it's just funny. For 4 years, no one had a concern with banning TikTok, and suddenly contributions start getting handed out to organizations and to individual campaigns. And that's their come to Jesus moment. It's not a real, you know, concern about some, you know, massive tech breach.
Right. And to be clear, the legislation is not banning it for its own sake. It's saying we don't trust a Chinese surveillance state to be present in hundreds of millions of Americans' pockets. And so if the ownership is transferred over to a different ownership where there can be more autonomy and, you know, some of these other American companies, the ownership questions, we don't have these as there are lots of problems with social media in general, with the algorithms right. And what it does to brain patterns, what it does to mental health. There's so much evidence for all of those things, but those are different issues from this basic question of national security and surveillance by a hostile communist nation. And so right. Elon Musk doesn't bring that baggage. And I think it's a pretty easy line of demarcation that I don't understand why Massey doesn't understand that.
Well, also, Tim, it's funny. I mean, everyone in this country, that's a little exaggeration. I hate to say that, but wigged out about a Chinese spy balloon floating over the country taking pictures. And this is like 170 million people having a Chinese spy balloon put in their phone on a daily basis to monitor every move and every single thing we're doing. And they're like, oh, well, maybe there's a First Amendment concern. I'm like, okay, well, then there's a First Amendment concern about a balloon being able to take photos of, you know, from an aerial. I mean, the concern to me just fell flat. To Carrie's point, this is an adversary who wants to do us harm, not just do us harm. They want to destroy us. And we're having a discussion and we're saying you can exist, but you just need to exist under U.S. ownership. We wouldn't allow, I mean, it's just to me, the whole notion of First Amendment, I get, I'm all for it, but we don't allow other enemies to come in and get access to saying, well, it's First Amendment, right? You can come in and start taking us over.
Yeah, you'll remember, you know, the FCC had these rules for television networks, right?
Right.
Rupert Murdoch had to become an American citizen. You know, so in that case, in today's world, these social media platforms are more powerful than most television networks. They have more
100%.
Reach. Yeah, I mean, so it doesn't make any sense to say, oh, who cares? You know, the late night comedians just think, let's make fun of the old people for trying to ban something that they don't understand.
Right.
And maybe they don't. But I think, you know, the other point you could say is you might argue this the other way and say that you have a lot of young people in this country who couldn't care less about China as long as they get to watch their videos.
Right. And Tim, the thing that I thought was fascinating was it truly was bipartisan, which gives me a little bit of hope that when it really comes down to it, when the rubber meets the road, that we can at least all agree sometimes. I wish that we had the same concern about the border, but at least on this particular issue. I mean, this was, let me just play for everyone what Nancy Pelosi had to say, which I can't believe we're highlighting Nancy Pelosi, but this was her clip on the House floor in support of the bill.
This is not an attempt to ban TikTok. It's an attempt to make TikTok better. Tic-tac-toe, a winner, a winner.
I mean, what could be more tech savvy than invoking tic-tac-toe? That was to me a way that it really got through to the octogenarians out there who were like, oh, I get it. Straight across or diagonal.
Yeah, she totally spelled it out for us, like AM radio or FM radio or something like that. And I want to be clear, too. Like, I'm not trying to cut TikTok any slack. I think that we need to do something about it desperately. I'm also just saying Washington, D.C. has a spiritual gift of screwing things up for folks later down the line whenever they package things into a major bill, similar to like the border legislation that had like 3 good things in it and 25 bad things in it that came out of the Senate. So the other thing here is to take a step back and look at the larger issue. TikTok is an attack, a Trojan horse on the United States, especially when it's backed up by the Chinese surveillance state. There's also other larger things at play that have been heightened under the Biden administration. You mentioned the Chinese spy balloon. It flew over so many states and so many assets. That's something that I don't think we saw escalate so much under Donald Trump under an America First foreign policy. We also have to think back a few years ago to when we had this issue with DJI drones that could film, and then there was a potential that the backlog on that would basically upload and send these strategic assets and the framework for landscape to the Chinese Communist Party of the United States' landscape. And basically, there are so many Chinese companies that are in the United States that we don't even necessarily recognize. And over the last few years, we have seen this heightened attack, this silent attack on the United States. And people don't want to do anything about it because, as you said, like with TikTok, you get that serotonin hit. So no one really wants to upset anyone, especially the younger voters. But if we don't actually try to do something about it, smack someone with reality, we're going to have a cyber attack that's really going to take down everything. So I don't understand why people don't necessarily consider this a major issue if they just want to appease the electorate or the voter base. I think that the people who are opposed to TikTok like us, the ones that want to see it removed from the Chinese communist government, removed from these backdoor Trojan horse resources, we have to also make sure that our communications aspect is explaining it a whole lot better to make sure it's like, look, yeah, we can have Instagram reels and we can have entertainment and things like that, but it can't come from a communist state.
That's very well put, because my whole thing is I love these members of Congress who are standing up and like, well, a lot of people make their lives doing that. And it's like, okay, so just be, and I feel for these people, honest to God, I would never want to harm someone's ability to provide for themselves or their families, but they're doing it on the backs of our national security. And we would never allow that if people said, well, I'm running a bunch of random software and malware into people, and I built this great small business. We'd be like, great, that's harming us, our country, our national security. That shouldn't be the excuse. Carrie, I was pleased. I think that Democrats probably benefit more from TikTok in terms of who younger voters are probably a better demographic from them. But at least understanding that this is something that we should get together with. I don't like to go down rabbit holes, but there's one that if you've watched the show before, you know I can't help myself. It's this fake title that they keep referring to Nancy Pelosi. We saw they're like Speaker Emerita. That's not true. She was never voted on by the House as Speaker Emerita, and the media and whatever. And maybe this is just a pet peeve of mine, and I'm sorry. I'm anti rabbit holes. But this one I have to go down, Carrie. I don't get it. Everybody bought into this fake title that she gets. You don't get to just be Speaker Emerita because you are. The House, it's an officer of the House. It's the highest constitutional office, third in line to the presidency. You don't get to create the office of Speaker Emerita because the Democrats like you and you chose to stick around well past your time.
I think it might be a sign of maybe some Stockholm syndrome because she was legendary for ruling with an iron fist. And maybe there's part of them that fear that perhaps if she gets back to power and they fail to call her by that title, then they could suffer the consequence. Maybe that's it. But I
know. And it's like, look, I get it. If people are like, Sean, give me a break. This is like of all the things you care about. But it's just, I think we talked this week about the border and words matter and why we talk newcomers versus illegals. I get it. This one grates on me because the media is like, I was out at this event last night and they were like, Speaker Emerita Nancy Pelosi, and I'm like, no, it's a real job with a, you can't just make up a title and make and for something that's that official.
I'm with you, but of course it's always rules for thee, but not for me. So. Right. And will they do that? I never heard Speaker Emeritus for Boehner ever. I never heard Speaker Emeritus Paul Ryan. When are you going to hear this? So, of course, it's a double standard. And it's, of course, it's-
I wish the House voted and just said you can't use these titles because that's what she's. I mean, anyway, Tim, I want to delve into the world of the media today because this is what you guys at the Media Research Center do. Donald Trump today is in court. He had a big day yesterday. Six of the counts in Georgia, the judge threw out. But he went down to Florida today. Well, he's in Florida. He went down a little south of where he is to a courthouse there that's dealing with his whole classified documents case, Mar-a-Lago. I just want to get you guys to weigh in on this strategically. During the primary, I think his appearances at these courthouses and in these judicial hearings highlighted how the weaponization, the lawfare that was being used against him. So he's there in Florida today. He doesn't have to be, but he's there because he wants to clearly call attention to this case. Joe Biden is in Michigan today, one of the eight battleground states. So what I want to ask you is this, from a media standpoint, and we'll get the whole panel to weigh in a second, is it still a good use of his time to be not in a battleground state campaigning for the presidency now that he's the nominee? Or is it better that you go to these hearings where you can highlight the lawfare that's being used against him?
Well, I suppose you could argue it's early in this long general election campaign that he doesn't have to feel the need to go to all 50 states at this particular time. I think you know Donald Trump is going to do things the way that maybe the conventional political analysts wouldn't tell him to do. Obviously, as you suggested, it wasn't required for him to be present. It's like he goes because he wants it to be a bigger story. And it was this morning. You know, they were all over this morning on CNN and MSNBC.
Right, and I'm not, but I guess you're right. They're going to cover it. But is that the best, like, would he be better served in Wisconsin or Arizona talking about immigration versus my personal court case in Florida?
I'm sure what he would say to you is that's what I did during the primaries instead of going to the states that had primaries.
Right.
And it worked for him. So,
right. But that's what I'm trying to draw. Do you think that still works? We've crossed. It clearly works in the primaries. Is it a good general election strategy?
I suppose in today's day and age, is campaigning in person as important as it used to be? When people can get you instantly on their TikTok on their phones. I mean, it maybe could be argued that it's not as necessary for you to campaign in person. On the other hand, there's Hillary Clinton didn't go to Wisconsin in 2016.
Well, there you go. Luke, just again, I want to go around. Do you think this is still a smart strategy to be taking a day that you could be in Georgia or North Carolina, Wisconsin, whatever, and being in Florida, not a battleground state, in my opinion, to do this in the general election?
Definitely, because this is the longest general election in history. He has plenty of time to go to all of these states. And don't forget, too, from a political financial perspective, you spend a ton of money going around the country and popping up in these battleground states or these essential states that you could just save a little bit later further on. The free media value from this, the earned media value from him showing up was astronomical. He probably gained financial resources today by showing up there. And it reminds me of back in the 2015, 2016 cycle, whenever people were anticipating that he was going to announce for president. So he kept going around and holding all these public events, like he had the grand opening at the Washington, D.C. Trump Hotel, and everyone showed up and covered that thinking that he was going to announce for president. He recognizes and keenly understands the media value here. And I believe that it actually plays well with some independents and undecided voters to highlight the fact that this issue's not going away. Like, we're not going to come 2 or 3 months from now, even if the entire 13 count Fannie Willis thing was thrown out, then this is still going to be an issue up to election day. They're going to try to remove him from ballots. They're going to try to indict him. They're going to try to move forward with these court cases. So why not address it head on and make it a center
point of your campaign, because so far he's turned it into a political asset. They're not after me. They're after you. I'm just in the way. And I'm literally sitting here in a courtroom or showing up to these hearings or presenting myself in front of these juries to prove that I am standing here, standing in front of all of you. I can't think of a better way to utilize this free media and save money further down the line.
Kerry, the thing that Luke brought up that I thought was actually really, I had not thought about that way, is it's not just the time and the coverage, it's the fundraising. I was in court today because this is what I'm doing. So he gets the media, and he probably will, I guarantee you, if I look down in my inbox, I will have a fundraising appeal from his campaign saying, here's what I was doing today because they're coming after me. Maybe that is a strong case to be said, that it's like net net, I get the media and I raised money.
Yeah, for me, I say yes and. Why can't he walk and chew gum? He can both use this to highlight Lawfare, and then he can pivot now and go more to these battleground states. So I think he should do both. So I agree with you, Sean. He should take that recommendation. I agree with what Luke said, that I was looking at some data on not only independents, but also Democrats, and of course Republicans. But the vast majority of the country perceives these prosecutions to be politically motivated. For the Democrats, they actually want it. They want the Democrats to go after because they hate him. So, but what's interesting is that the majority of independents also believe that is politically motivated. So if everybody knows that this is really a political game, then the charade is up. The charade of it being somehow a legitimate, unbiased, that justice is blind. We all know that's not the case, because in New York, they changed the law so they could literally prosecute Donald Trump. That's not having the law be blind. So, and then hearing how they use it to, the Democrats raise money off of prosecuting Trump. So it's sad, actually. It's sad that our judicial system is such, it is becoming a banana republic. However, Trump is saying, he's actually pointing out the fact that it's a banana republic. And it's unfortunate that that's come to this. But the other thing I would say is, especially for the still never Trumpers out there, and to some of my very liberal friends who just are, they can't stand Trump. They don't understand it. I'm a recovered never Trumper myself. But the I tell them to go watch WWE wrestling. And, and the reason why is because that's where Trump came from. And the language, because they can't stand his language. But if you watch WWE wrestling, they're always throwing around just like these wild metaphors. They're playing in characters. It's just part of this understanding that it's the arena. And so people who don't understand that culture or that background of where he's coming from, they can't place it. But tens of millions of people are obsessed with WWE wrestling, and that's where he's coming from. And I think that they'll maybe their Trump derangement syndrome can be inoculated a bit if you understand kind of where he's coming from.
Not just WWE, but you watch him walk into some of these UFC events with Dana White, and it's like the place goes nuts. All right, folks, in this ever-changing economy with the ups and the downs, if you want a place to diversify your investments, call my friends at Bishop Gold Group, or you can check them out at bishopgoldgroup.com/Sean, or give them a call, 844-984-1616. Now, you're getting bombarded with ads for golds and precious metals. Bishop Gold Group are the people that I trust. They're the people that I called. Yes, I've actually put my money in Bishop Gold Group's hands and said, tell me how to grow my investments. So if you got a 401k, an IRA, or you just want to expand your investments with precious metals, these guys will sit down with you and talk about the best strategy for you, just like I did. And the way the economy's going now, you need a place, whether it's gold, silver, or other precious metals, they will tailor a plan for you. Bishop Gold Group are the people that I trust. It's integrity, it's transparency, and these guys have the understanding of the market to tell you where to be based on your needs. Go to bishopgoldgroup.com to begin your journey with precious metals. You get a free gift if you do that, or call 844-984-1616. Thank you. Tim, the thing that's interesting that as I've listened to this, that I started to think in my head, is it's not just some random court case that he's in, right? He's at the Miami one down there to hear this case about the classified documents at Mar-a-Lago. Well, what happened earlier this week? Robert Hur, the special counsel, was testifying about Biden's mishandling of the documents, right? And I kept thinking to myself after the fact. So Hur testifies this week. Robert Hur, the special counsel, says I had to explain that, yes, he lied because he said that he didn't give classified information to his ghostwriter. We have that on tape. Biden literally saying the classified documents are over there to the ghostwriter. So we know that that's not true. We know that he had them in various places for a long time. He wasn't president like Trump was. Therefore, he had no right to. I mean, the list goes on and on. Why? You know, he had him at the Penn Center. There was a great viral clip.
Mr. Herr, classified documents were found at the Penn Biden Center?
That's correct.
They were found in President Biden's garage?
In Wilmington, Delaware, yes.
And in his basement den?
Also in the same home, yes.
In the major, in his main floor office?
Correct.
And his third floor den?
Correct.
At the University of Delaware?
Correct.
And at the Biden Institute?
Correct.
Both him saying, yes, this was in Wilmington in the garage. This was by the Corvette. These were at the Penn Biden Center. These were, I mean, University of Delaware. I mean, boom, 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 right? And you've got Trump now down in court saying, oh, wait, so he can do all this and I can't? You think about the Dems' argument this week, Tim, and this is maybe I'm pushing this too far, but I feel like we'll be interested to see how Trump plays this in the next 24, 48 hours, because the Democrats' argument against Robert Herr was, no. You were wrong. Biden isn't, you know, this old sympathetic guy with a bad memory. And if that's the case, if you accept the Democrats' argument that Robert Herr was wrong to describe Biden as this, and he wouldn't have been sympathetic to a jury, then he should have been prosecuted. You can't have it both ways if you're a Democrat. You can't say, you know, yes, he did violate the law. We now have him dead to right. But Robert Herr, his whole argument was, here's why I don't think he would have been found guilty. If the Dems are saying, no, those arguments aren't that strong, he should be deemed a really smart guy or whatever their argument is, you are wrong to classify him as a guy without a bad memory, then you got to prosecute him and he would have been found guilty. But I think Trump might start to play all this out.
Well, I think it's true that most people will look at these cases, and the Democrats were trying very hard in this hearing to say, oh, they're different. They're different because Biden cooperated and Trump obstructed. But as we all know, Biden had these documents for decades.
Yes.
And then when he gets caught, he goes, oh, now I'll cooperate.
Exactly. You know? No, exactly. That's the great point. He only admitted that he had them once Trump started to go through his ordeal and said, oh, crap, what was it by the Corvette that I left? Right. He didn't just come forward. Number one. Number two, he wasn't president and governed by the Presidential Record Act. Therefore, he should have never had these documents ever, ever, ever. Anyway.
Well, I mean, this is the whole oddity of this. I think the voters, this is one of those things that frustrates the media. I think the voters can see that these are two pretty similar cases, that they both had classified documents that they shouldn't have had. And the liberals try to make a big deal about how, well, Trump's were in his bathroom. Well, Biden's were everywhere. They were in the basement den. They were in the garage. They were over here. They were at the University of Delaware. People, I think a lot of people look at this and say, these things are pretty much the same, and they kind of cross each other out. What's different about these two cases, if we're going to differentiate, yes, they went very politely into Biden's places, and they raided Trump's house. And the idea that still hasn't sunk in with the media, that people could be upset at how that feels third worldy, that they would raid the house in search of documents. It's not like they were trying to find a bomb. They were searching through Melania's clothes looking for documents.
It's strange. I think it's strange. And just the fact that the double standard, that I think that's unfortunately being lost in the media. Like, I don't know if at MRC you guys have done a study of the ratio. I would not be surprised at all if the ratio of the negative coverage of the Trump case versus the Biden case. And then also, I understand that the guy who, you know, he gave his testimony, he authored the report. Why still wouldn't, if he is the president, why, and the Democrats say he has his faculties, even still, the law should be blind in all cases. You shouldn't use the law to weaponize the law against Trump or change the law to specifically go after one person. And then to have the governor of New York saying, oh, don't be afraid to do business in New York because we're not going to prosecute you. We just did it to go after Trump. Like, how is that not like just total miscarriage of justice? But then similarly, to not bring prosecution against Biden because he's a sweet old man or senile. That again is a miscarriage of justice. In both cases, it's just it's Orwellian.
Well, yeah. Sean, I've made this joke that, you know, most of the time that Robert Hur was investigating, you never heard a word about him. Most Americans had no idea that investigation was going on. I said, you could put that guy's face on a milk carton because the news media did not acknowledge that pretty much. The only time they acknowledged that was when Biden actually consented to the interviews there in October. It's the only time that they were sort of like, well, there's this thing going on.
Yeah, and you also got to remember, too, that there was, in addition to that double standard, like if Trump had kept a book out of the Library of Congress for too long, the federal government would have sent Miami SWAT to just bust through the doors at Mar-a-Lago. Like the double standard there, number one. But also the documents that Joe Biden had went far beyond just having these classified documents. They go back as far as he was in office, like in the Senate, and he's been in public office for a long time. If we actually looked at all the documents, we could probably find General Cornwallis's troop movements in some of there. But it was not from when he was just vice president, but also back when he was Senate. He didn't have unilateral authority to declassify these documents. So what does the federal government do with Joe Biden? They work through his lawyers and they allow him to return them. What do they do with Donald Trump? They raid Mar-a-Lago. And then the National Archives and Record Administration issues a casting call to all former presidents and vice presidents to like check between their couch cushions to see if they had any documents from their time in office. Like Jimmy Carter was going to find some of these, you know, historical documents in his chest of drawers or something like that. And then they had just allowed them to turn them back in. And we also have to remember that anytime there's a development in this case, it's worse for Joe Biden because they no longer have that narrative that they can go after Donald Trump with. They used it at first, and then it came out that Joe Biden had these documents, and now the narrative has completely collapsed in on them.
Yeah, I think that's such great points because the media wants to keep saying they're different, and it's like, no, actually, it's worse for Biden. If you really want to break it down, I think, Luke, you're example spot on. There was like an APB put out. If you have documents, let us know. Biden had them for decades. He didn't say anything. He didn't come forward voluntarily, as they like to say. He only cooperated because he's like, look what's going on with Trump. I better go look by the Corvette and then fess up real quick. Carrie, I want to bring up an article that I thought was so fascinating this week that came out in Politico. And it says Biden's uneasiness on abortion riles progressives again. Let me kind of read you the beginning of it, because I got to be honest with you, it kind of blew my mind. But it says some on the left are dismayed by what they see as a harmful divide between good and bad abortions. Joe Biden is highlighting on the campaign trail stories of women struggling to access reproductive health care, but he's only telling certain kind of stories. The State of the Union last week is the latest example how the president is the most comfortable lifting up women who've not been able to receive fertility care, contraception, and abortions in cases of rape, incest, and medical emergencies to demonstrate the consequences of the Supreme Court's decision to overturn Roe versus Wade. He appears less willing, to the chagrin of some abortion rights advocates, to talk about women who have struggled to terminate unwanted pregnancies for other reasons. The idea that somehow there are good and bad abortions, and we want you to be talking about I've seen a lot, but that one kind of caught me off guard.
Well, I can see why they're doing that. And I'm just speaking as myself, because for Independent Women's Forum, we don't take a position on abortion. But the reality is, according to the Guttmacher Institute, which is one of the biggest abortion statistics outfits out there, only about 1.5% of abortions are cases of rape or incest. So you're talking about the vast majority of cases are really for economic convenience. And when you dig into the polling around how people feel about that, they're far less sympathetic to that. So I think politically, that's part of the calculus for why Biden's doing it, because he knows it's going to pull a lot more heartstrings to talk about this, you know, horrible case of an 11-year-old girl. I mean, that's tragic. But the reality is those cases are so rare that it's focusing on a very narrow wedge case because it's effective politically. So I don't understand why I know why these Democrats are doing it, probably because they They want abortions of convenience. They want abortions up until the moment of birth. But the reality is most Americans don't feel that way. And there's a spectrum of along the 9 months, the older the baby gets, the less sympathetic people are to killing that baby, especially for convenience. So I think that's why Biden's doing it. There might be some old part of Biden, because back in the day, he used to say that way back before he became hijacked by the hard left, Joe Biden, the senator, used to say that an abortion is a tragedy. You know, that was the Joe Biden of old. And unfortunately, that Joe Biden is gone, and he's become overtaken by the left. But maybe there's also possibly some kernel of that old Biden.
Right. Tim, the thing that's interesting to me, to Carrie's point, Joe Biden, and I documented in my book, Radical Nation, he literally says that Roe versus Wade was, quote, wrongly decided. Joe Biden only switched his position on abortion when he realized how far left the base has gone. But I think, as I said, tell me, as somebody who looks at the media every single day, am I wrong? I mean, the idea that we went from talking about abortion and Roe versus Wade to now good abortions and bad abortions?
They loved this story of Kate Cox in Texas, who had to go outside of Texas to get her late-term abortion because it was a medical emergency, so she said. And there she was in the Jill Biden's box there at the State of the Union. It is amazing sometimes for them to say, Joe Biden isn't pro-abortion enough. The complaint used to be he didn't say the A word enough. This is really where they are, is that the abortion lobby expects the president of the United States to say abortions are great. Go get one. You know, right. There should be an abortion clinic in every town and every street. I mean, that seems to be where they are. And that's where, yes, obviously other people are looking at what Carrie's looking at and saying a lot of people are in the gray middle on this. And I think they know it. One of the things that always amuses me is when any politician says, and certainly Donald Trump says, that they support abortion up until birth and sometimes after, because we all remember what Ralph Northam said about after, the fact checkers have a cow, because they try to say, well, it's false because late-term abortions are rare. That's not a fact check. Just because late-term abortions are rare doesn't mean they don't occur, you know. And if it's 1% or 2%, it's still thousands of late-term abortions in the United States. So it is fascinating the way they don't really want to focus on. If you look at the Democrat platform on 2020, it's very clear. We support abortion, period, for any reason, at any time. And somehow, you'll remember, Kristen Welker did this to Trump when she interviewed him. Nobody believes that. The Democrats, nobody has a stance that abortion at every time. And it's like, yeah, they do. Well,
and for those folks in the audience, when Tim referenced Ralph Northam, he was the former governor of Virginia, who's actually a doctor who was on
a pediatrician
on a local D.C. area radio station, where he said, we wait for the baby to come out and then we make a decision. We'll come out. Means it's alive, it's a baby. And then, and to your point, Tim, he the Dems, including Kristen Welker and others, are now like, well, that's not really what they meant, and it's rare. And it's like, they're there to cover for these guys. But Luke, I just want to get back to the strategic nature of this. Why does, if you're on the left, Biden's carrying your water for you. He's like, here, I'm going to say that Roe was wrong and we need to fight for this. Da, da, da. If you're a supporter of the bad abortions or whatever that means, why do you really care as long as you get what you... They're like, unless you're cheerleading for us, it's not good enough. But to Tim's point, strategically, polling-wise, you start talking about the other abortions, being able to, you know, kill a baby at will because you don't like the genetic makeup of it, or, hey, we can tell it's going to have blonde hair. That's going to lose public support real quick.
Yeah, Biden's whole position so far has been argument by anecdote. And so when we're looking at the State of the Union and seeing him highlight that, Congressman Bob Good from Virginia brought somebody who was basically conceived from rape. And he said, I'm the 1% that the media wants you to focus on, and I am here to advocate that my life matters. And that was just really powerful and important. And I think it's a very strong counteractive to whatever Joe Biden is out there talking. But if you're having this discussion, especially with somebody who brings up that 1%, say this: if we removed that 1%
and said that, okay, that's fine. We could allow the 1% abortion or whatever. Would you still be in favor of the 99% that aren't conceived out of incest, rape, or life of the mother? And they won't be able to answer you, or they will basically double down and say, no, we want abortion up until birth. And the Republican position, too, has been lacking in a communications argument for why we even believe what we believe. So personally, and I speak for myself, there's a really great argument out there. It's the SLED argument. And you have to answer, if you can package it in like 60 seconds, you say, like, what is the unborn? That, like, that's the definition that you have to answer. That's the question you have to pose. And then there's only a few, four differences between someone that is inside the womb and outside the womb: size, level of development, environment, and dependability. Size, someone who is 4 feet tall is no more a person than someone who's 6 feet tall. So why would somebody who's inside the womb that's small be any different than someone that's outside the womb? Size, level of development. I have really fantastic cousins who suffer from mental illness. They have Down syndrome. They have development problems, things of that nature. They're no more or less than a human than I am. We are all at the same status as a human. Environment. When I get on an airplane and travel down to Texas or Florida or whatever, I am no more or less a person when I get on that airplane than when I get off. And so why would a few feet down a birth canal change my status as a human being? And then dependability. Whenever I see a 2 or 3 year old child that is clinging to their mother, I recognize that they are highly dependent upon that individual, but they are just as much a human as I am at 28 years old. And those are the only differences between someone that is inside the womb and outside the womb. Nobody that I have heard in the public sphere has been able to articulate this point, who has been able to debate it. And I guarantee you that if you present a left-wing progressive Democrat with any of these talking points, they're going to have a really difficult time arguing with you.
Very well said. And I appreciate you sticking up for short people, because that is, and, you know, Carrie can join me on that one. But I feel like, again, I think you're absolutely right. It's very well said and articulated and scientific. It's not subjective. Tim, I know we started with TikTok. I want to end to some degree with X. I was going to say Twitter and make it alliterative, but Don Lemon got fired from CNN because he sucks. And then he launches the show on, or he claims he has a deal with Elon Musk to put a show like Tucker Carlson does on X. His first interview, it looks like, was with Elon Musk, where he basically told him how much he's a horrible person and he's allowing anti-Semitism to spread through that. And then Elon Musk says, yeah, okay, you can still put your show on X, but I'm not paying for it anymore. And Elon Musk now wants to sue him. I was like, dude, just pro tip, bro. If you're going to launch a show, don't interview the CEO and tell him he's a horrible person.
John, the only reason I'm doing this interview is because you're on the X platform and you asked for it. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I would not do this interview.
So you don't think, do you think that you wouldn't get in trouble or you wouldn't be criticized for these things?
I'm criticized constantly. I could care less.
He took the hand that was going to feed him and bit it before he was fed. There's a reason we've always said that Don Lemon was one of the dumbest people on television. I think he just proved it once again.
I know.
But he can't help himself. I mean, I guess he's like, you know, I'm rich enough. I don't need this job. He wants to have the influence. Maybe he doesn't need the money as much, because anybody who actually needs the money wouldn't do such a thing.
No, what a
well,
moron.
I think also too, there's a level of living in a bubble that Don Lemon exists. And I used to go on his CNN program as a guest until I was banned because I dared to say that it was wrong to be both sexist and racist. And he said that I was excusing racism by doing whataboutism about sexism. Didn't make sense to me, but whatever. I wish him no ill. I will say, though, that he exists, I think, in a bubble. And I think all of his friends in that New York, upper, you know, Hamptons elite liberal bubble set, they all despise Elon Musk. So it's right. So normal, and the level of virtue signaling for Don Lemon to do something like that, it makes sense to him. But anybody else outside that bubble would say that's not very wise to do that to your boss. But it's so normalized to hate somebody so deeply like Elon Musk that it just seems so natural for him.
Yeah. Pro tip, don't start your show off by telling your boss they suck. anyway. All right. I mentioned during the intros, Carrie, you have a brand new book, Motorhome Prophecies. Go out, check it out on Amazon. A great personal story. It's right there. It's for sale on Amazon and available in bookstores now. I've gotten a chance to read some of it. Really compelling story. So go get the book. Guys, thanks for joining us. For all of you, tomorrow we've got a great show about what it's going to take, what we literally have to do on the ground to win the 2024 elections. We're going to get a roadmap where those key states are, the counties, the issues. This is going to drive us into the weekend. Be really smart. Tune in tomorrow. Subscribe to the show. Hit that notification button so you don't miss it and you can sound extremely smart over the weekend. Thanks for all you're doing to support the show. But remember to subscribe. Amazon, that's Carrie's book. YouTube, Rumble, Apple, Spotify. Hit that notification button as well. Visit our VIP show, SeanSpicerShow.vip. We'll see you back here tomorrow.